Millions of Iranians are set to head into polling stations in a couple of hours to determine the president of the Islamic Republic. Iranian lawmakers and grand ayatollahs call on Iranians to take part in presidential elections in massive numbers. Hundreds of foreign reporters from 39 countries cover Iran presidential elections. Iran exports 66% more crude oil in May than in April, despite US-engineered sanctions. And Syrian army advances against foreign-sponsored militants during mobile operations on the outskirts of the capital, Damascus. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, hello and welcome. I'm Ali Reza Madadi with the latest coming to you live from Tehran. First of all, millions of Iranians will head into polling stations in a couple of hours from now to determine the president of the Islamic Republic for the next 4 years. Around 51 million eligible voters in Iran are getting ready to cast their ballots as the six candidates wrapped up their final day of campaigning across the country on Wednesday. Ahead of the vote, the national opinion polls indicate that a great portion of the eligible voters will take part in the country's 11th presidential elections. The Iranian voters will have to choose among six candidates who have a stake in the race. Under the election law, a presidential candidate must obtain more than 50% of the votes in the initial round to win outright. The fourth city and rural council elections are also scheduled to be held on Friday. Over 66,000 polling stations will be set up across the country, while expatriates will also be able to cast their ballots at 285 polling stations that will be set up overseas. Now, Iranian lawmakers have called on the nation to take part in Friday's presidential election and city council elections in massive numbers, saying a huge turnout will safeguard national security and promote democracy. Lawmakers said Iran's enemies seek to foment despair and discourage participation in elections through their media propaganda campaigns. They added that participation is a duty because it will show that all Iranians care about the country and its future. Iranian grand ayatollahs have also called for a massive voter turnout in the June 14th election to choose the country's 11th president. In separate statements released on Thursday, senior Iranian clerics, including Grand Ayatollahs Hossein Nouri Hamadani, Nasser Makarem Shirazi, and Muhammad Ali Alavi Gorgani, among others, called for massive participation of voters in the presidential poll. They called on the Iranians to vote for the most qualified candidate who is pious and revolutionary, would safeguard Islamic values, and meet the basic needs of people. Now, some 421 reporters from 193 foreign media of 39 countries will cover Iran's presidential elections. According to the Foreign Media Department of Iran's Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance, foreign reporters have been provided with means to broadcast direct pictorial reports to audience of their respective media. Germany, Austria, Spain, Australia, the US, Britain, Italy, Belgium, Sweden, and Switzerland are among the 39 countries which have sent reporters to cover news on the elections. Iranian nationals living in Spain will also be able to cast their votes in a polling station placed in Iranian consulate in Madrid. There are more than 15,000 Iranian nationals living in Spain.
15,000 Iranians live in Spain. Next Friday, they are called to vote for the next president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In Spain, the ballot boxes will be open from 8 in the morning to 6 in the evening. Once the votes are counted, the results will be transmitted to Tehran. Dr. Eliassi has lived in Spain for different periods. In 2009, he decided to study in Spain. He still remembers the achievement of the Iranian Revolution. Zahra Yahagi lives in Spain since 8 years ago. She's happy to participate in the elections. Dr. Mohammad Hosseini has been living in Spain for 15 years, but next Friday will be his first chance to vote.
Around 15,000 Iranians live in Spain. Next Friday, this consulate will be the place where they will execute their right to vote in the presidential elections of the Islamic Republic of Iran. From Madrid, Tamim El-Dalati, by Shabak Ehabar.
Now, Iran has denied a Reuters report which claims that the country's foreign minister, Ali Akbar Soleihi, has proposed to open wide-ranging talks with the United States. Reuters claimed on Wednesday that the top Iranian diplomat put forward the proposal 5 months ago in a letter to the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, calling for entering into broad discussions with the U.S. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Abbas Araghchi dismissed the allegations as baseless, calling it a kind of a storytelling ahead of the upcoming presidential elections in Iran. He said it is not the first time that the West has made such claims to distract public opinion. Iran severed ties with the United States some 33 years ago. Now, according to the International Energy Agency, Iran exported 66% more crude oil in May than in April, with China increasing its purchases from the Islamic Republic. According to the report, China imported 715,000 barrels a day of Iranian crude last month, which is almost double the quantity it imported in April. The IEA said that Iran's crude oil output rose by 30,000 barrels a day in May to 2.68 million barrels a day. On May 31st, the Iranian oil minister said that illegal U.S.-engineered sanctions had not impacted the Islamic Republic's crude oil production. He also stated that the country's crude oil exports had decreased slightly, but the small amount was being used for the production of oil products for export. And before we continue, here's a recap of our top stories. Millions of Iranians are set to head into polling stations in a couple of hours to determine the president of the Islamic Republic. Iranian lawmakers and Grand Ayatollahs call on Iranians to take part in presidential elections in massive numbers. Hundreds of foreign reporters from 39 countries cover Iran's presidential elections. Iran exports 66% more crude oil in May than in April, despite U.S.-engineered sanctions. And Syrian army advances against foreign-backed militants during mob operations on the outskirts of the capital, Damascus. As I just mentioned, Syrian army soldiers have killed dozens of foreign-sponsored militants during mob operations on the outskirts of the capital, Damascus. According to Sana News Agency on Thursday, a number of militants were killed during intense clashes with Syrian troops in the town of Al-Zibaya. Two mortar launchers and a heavy machine gun used by a militant group were also destroyed in the operations. Large amounts of weapons and munitions were also destroyed after the fierce gun battles. Separately, a unit of government troops clashed with militants in the town of Jobar, located in the suburbs of Damascus, killing and injuring a number of them. In addition, Syrian troops fully purged the Abu Layth village in the western province of Hama of foreign-backed militants on Thursday. In other news, Syrian forces attacked militants near Aleppo International Airport. The militants were reportedly moving their forces to Aleppo's northern belt when they were attacked by the Syrian army on Thursday. Still on that, the U.S. administration has eased sanctions on the Syrian rebel groups to pave the ground to send more military equipment to terrorist cells. The fresh move aimed to enable additional relief and reconstruction activities in militant-controlled areas of Syria. As the Obama administration was discussing arming the Syrian terrorist groups, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and his British counterpart William Hague have vowed to do their utmost to provide required military equipment to militant groups as well. The European Union also lifted its arms embargo on the Syrian militants in late May. Now, the U.S. support of foreign-backed militants in Syria comes as the United Nations says thousands of Syrian children have been killed in over 2 years of foreign-backed militancy in the country. The Office of the UN Chief's Special Representative on Children in Conflict said it had received verified reports that Syrian children are killed or injured in indiscriminate bombings shot by snipers used as human shields or victims of terror tactics. It added that thousands of Syrian children have also witnessed family members being killed or injured. It also said that boys as young as 10 years of age are being used by the Takfiri militants as combatants and porters.
The constant flow of killings continues at shockingly high levels, with more than 5,000 killings documented every month since last July, including a total of just under 27,000 new killings since December 2012. Unfortunately, as the study indicates, this is most likely a minimum casualty figure. The true number of those killed is potentially much higher. The killings of close to 7,055 minors, including at least 1,729 children under 10 years old, have been documented. There are also well-documented cases of individual children being tortured and executed, and entire families, including babies, being massacred, which, along with this devastatingly high death toll, is a terrible reminder of just how vicious this conflict has become. The only answer is a negotiated political solution.
Now, Turkish police on Thursday fired tear gas and water cannons against protesters in the capital Ankara after protesters made barricades with paving stones and roadside signs. Thousands of protesters gathered at Kugulu Park in Ankara to support Gezi Park demonstrations in Istanbul. The death toll from clashes between anti-government protesters and police in Turkey has reached 5. In reaction to the public demonstrations, Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has given a last warning to thousands of anti-government protesters, saying his government will rid Istanbul's Taksim Square of troublemakers. Within the next 24 hours. He said he could not wait any longer, saying Gezi Park did not belong to the occupying people. Meanwhile, the Turkish government may hold a referendum on Gezi Park development project in an attempt to put an end to the ongoing protests in the country.
It's 17th day and we are waiting the same thing, police attacks, and we want to protect this area, and we just want to tell something to government and to all over the country, and about freedom, about the park, about the green, about the trees, and everything is the same.
And finally, public services ground to a halt in Greece on Thursday as unions launched a 24-hour general strike in protest over the government's decision to shut down public broadcaster ERT as part of sweeping cost-cutting measures. The protesters called the decision on ERT unacceptable.
Greece's public broadcasting corporation, funded with mandatory levies from electric bill payments, will close and then reopen with a far smaller number of workers. Greek people in the streets of Athens could hardly believe that ERT has been taken off air after Prime Minister Antonis Samaras decided to pull the plug and entirely shut down the television, radio and websites in order for the company to be restructured. Yet, as the representative of the Athens news agency underlined to Irin TV, the decision has left 2,600 people on the streets, with workers and their families in despair. Greece is set to fire 2,000 civil servants by the end of the year and 15,000 by the end of 2014 on the orders of international lenders, who agreed on a second multi-billion bailout to keep the Greek ailing economy ashore. Over the past 40 years, Socialist PASOK and Conservative New Democracy had been accused of hiring needless workers in a return for clientelistic votes and political cronyism. According to official announcements, the new broadcaster would have fewer and more flexible staff. A legislative decree that has already been published in the Government Gazette that allows for public enterprises to be restructured, while all opposition and coalition parties alike were underlining it is inconceivable for Greece to lose the country's national broadcaster. It is still not clear how or how fast this decision will affect ERT's various services, yet yesterday at 10 p.m. local time, the country's state broadcaster transmission went to black and public service radio stations also went off air.
After the public gas corporation privatization process failed, the Greek government decided to completely shut down the National Broadcasting Corporation, including its television, its radio stations, as well as multiple websites. A new, smaller and more flexible entity is expected to be created. Yet until then, most Greeks are left without their basic access to public information they had before. Lucas Romanos, Shabaka Kabar, Aten.
Well, with that, we come to an end of this edition of IRI in English News. Thank you very much for staying with us. Goodbye.